Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca Mac with me, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Whoops, you caught me, Audrey. I was taking one last swig of that new Starbucks Via coffee. But welcome, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Keith Haley. Welcome to the Jumble Justice Radio Show on the ever-growing Blog Talk Radio Network. We're going to do it again. Johnny Cash, he got us through the opening here, and he takes us to more than 90 cities and states as he sings that wonderful country song. You know, Mike, you and I were kind of investigating here last week, and we were looking here and there at some Blog Talk Radio shows, and I was looking at a guest, listening to a guest on one of the shows that wrote a book that I just read recently. And as we looked around on some of those shows, you noticed that more and more of them are using country music as their introduction music to the to their shows. I don't know. Are we converting people here? I'm not exactly sure, but thank you very much, Audrey, for getting us on the show. And Emily and Mike, thank you for being here with us tonight. And Mike, you did a little special thing for us here tonight on the issue of water. And we're going to reserve that news story until we get to our green tip of the evening. The purpose of our show, ladies and gentlemen, is what it always is. We like to talk about news, events, issues, problems, and this always difficult, but sometimes humorous, field of criminal justice. And these criminal justice practitioners, they spend their time and effort trying to protect us throughout the United States. And certainly, since we spoke with you last, the assault in Fort Hood, Texas, gives us an example of a couple of police heroes that we know of at this point. There may, in fact, be more. Of course, there were many there that helped wrap up that particular situation. And we certainly, our hearts and our prayers go out to the families and the victims of those who were killed and injured in that particular event at Fort Hood, Texas. Almost unimaginable, isn't it? And as the story continues to break, more and more things come out about it. And it's really an odd one. I think by next week we'll have more to say about that particular item on the show. You're listening on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and again, it just continues to amaze me. How can anyone believe that Alan Levy could come up with something over 3 years ago where he started with one little radio show, and now there are literally thousands and thousands of radio shows, tens of thousands archived on the Blog Talk Radio Network, and anybody can have their own radio show? We're an example, right? Right, Mike? But anyway, what's possible? Any person, interest group, organization can have their own show. You can broadcast live and streaming audio over the internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. Just think about that. It's absolutely free. And if you were trying to get on the radio 10 years ago in the United States, it would have cost you a pretty penny. But now you can just tune right into this marvelous medium called the Internet or World Wide Web, and away you go. So these shows, by the way, our show and all the others are archived almost immediately at the completion of the show. So within 10 or 15 minutes, you can download those shows, keep them, and use them as you like. There's no copyright type of infringement on those shows. So what we'll do tonight is what we usually do. We're going to take a look at some of the criminal justice news, but we're going to do something kind of special. This is a belated tribute, a little day, one day off, to our veterans that serve us worldwide in all the armed forces. If I go through them all in some of the little smaller units, I'd probably miss something, but you know what I mean. The Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, Air Force, et cetera, et cetera. They do a marvelous job for us, and we live in the land of the free, and there's a good reason because those people do it. So our story tonight is going to involve them to some degree. Our feature part of the show is we go back to an old-time radio show and listen to David Harding, Counter Spy, and I think you're going to enjoy this one. There's a little surprise in there for some veterans as we go through the show. What you do as a listener, you can do on the call-in portion or the news portion of the show. You can call in on 347-996-5983. That's 347-996-5983. And we can talk about some of the news items if you like, or mention anything you want that's presentable on radio. We don't accept everything. We did have that guy call in from Lips, Texas once, and I was a little afraid about what was going on with him, but let's don't talk about that. Well, Audrey has a blonde joke, as usual, every week for over 3 years. She searches through her resources in terms of her collection of blonde jokes, and Audrey is a blonde, in case you happen to be a first-time listener. And she has one tonight that I think that you will find interesting, and they're always new, by the way. So think of this. Audrey, what are we up to? 70 blonde jokes, something like that, and you've never used the same one twice. Let's hear this one, Audrey.
Professor Haley, our blonde joke for tonight is a short one, but I think folks will enjoy it. Here it is. A young blonde bride calls her mother in tears. She sobs. Robert doesn't appreciate what I do for him. Now, her mother comforted. I am sure it was all just a misunderstanding. No, mother, the young woman laments. I bought a frozen turkey loaf, and he yelled at me about the price. Well, that is being miserly, the mother agreed. Those turkey rolls are only a few dollars. No, mother, it wasn't the price of the turkey roll, it was the airplane ticket. Airplane ticket. What did you need an airplane ticket for? Well, mother, when I went to fix it, I looked at the directions on the back and it said, prepare from a frozen state, so I flew to Alaska.
All right, that's a good one. I noticed President Obama was in Alaska this evening on a short stopover on his way on his Asian trip. It's a marvelous state if you've never been there. It's really something. It's really special. And I think the president even mentioned that it was the last frontier, and I think they're certainly right when they talk about that. But ladies and gentlemen, on a much more serious note, the Ohio Coalition on, Against Firearms, they want you to hear a public service announcement, and they're really directing this toward the criminals. We're going to have a gun story later on in the news section tonight, but they would like for the criminals in the state of Ohio, across the nation, across the world, actually, who hear this announcement, to lay down their firearms. So go ahead, Ohio Coalition. Let's hear what you have to say again.
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Well, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition. And we certainly hope that that message falls on the proper ears and they take the appropriate action and do their civic duty and stop being a criminal and simply turn in their firearms. And I know I know that Mayor Daley in Chicago would agree with us 100% on that particular issue. Well, ladies and gentlemen, as the planet becomes warmer and warmer, we need to fight off global warming. Is it, Mike, you're saying what? The planet's getting cooler? No, can't be. I've listened to Al Gore even recently say that it's getting warmer. No, it's not cooler. This hasn't been the coldest October in 10 or 12 or 15 years. No, it isn't. Okay. But anyway, in order to sustain this planet, we've been trying to pass out a green tip each week, and we thought this would be a good one. You need, what did you say this was, Emily? Fix the drip. What's that mean? Punch out that troublesome neighbor that lives? No, it doesn't mean that. Okay. Here's what it says. You should do a water inventory in your house and fix that leaky faucet. And along with that, if you are leaving your faucet running while you're brushing your teeth or you're shaving, this is really a number one type of infraction. So get into the habit of turning that faucet off. And then you know there's something else that you can do. And if you happen to live in the city of Cleveland, this is something that perhaps you really should do. Let me give you this news story first, and then I'll give you the green tip. But I find this rather amazing. The water department in the city of Cleveland is being cautioned by the Ohio auditor, Mary Taylor. She's telling Cleveland to do something about a ballooning number of broken water meters, forcing the city to guess what some customers owe the city. A state audit has found the number of water department accounts with unreadable meters rose to, are you sitting down? They rose to nearly 35,000 last year from about 2,100 in 2003. So there's 35,000 people in the city of Cleveland who are paying their water bills, and the city is guessing at what the bill is. A recent investigation by the Plain Dealer, the newspaper of Cleveland, found some water customers had not had a reading in years. So in years, some of these people have never had their meter read because it's been broken, and I guess the city doesn't tell you that. So when there are meter problems, the city estimates what's owed for water. Steve Faulkner, a spokesman for the auditor, says there's no way to tell whether the customers are paying too much or too little, or if the city is losing money. The audit requires the water department to make the meters a special high priority here in the immediate future. But isn't that incredible? I mean, at what point does the city of Cleveland wake up and say, maybe we ought to be fixing some meters? There must be some type of stimulus program that would at least get people paying the right, you know, this is going to end up in court, you know that. Somebody's going to say they've been paying too much over the years, and, you know, Cleveland proved that we didn't. So just incredible things like that could happen. Well, let's go ahead and move on to the news segment of the show tonight, and there's a lot of different things going on in the criminal justice news, that is for sure, and we'll try to cover some of them. One of them has to do with the Fort Hood case in Texas, and it's really interesting. But let's go back to firearms again. Mayor Bloomberg and Mayor Daley would love this so much, and I think they probably have their own version of that. But Newark, New Jersey has a gun buyback program. Is everyone familiar with how that works? In other words, if you have a gun, you could take it down to the police department and turn that firearm in, no questions asked, and you'll be given a certain amount of money. And this is this firearm exchange is rather worthwhile in the city of Newark. Anyone who turned in the gun at Emmanuel Christian Church was given $200, with $50,000 allocated to the program. That money eventually ran out. So this is kind of like it says here in the news article. This is sort of like the cash for clunkers, but here this is cash for guns. The Newark Police Department said 280 guns were turned in on Wednesday and today on the first 2 days, and that has temporarily drained the program's coffers. So if you have a gun that you pay $25 for at one of those evil gun shows, or you bought from a neighbor or something like that, or Mike, you wouldn't say that. I mean, guns that could be stolen from someone's house could be turned into? No questions asked. You're absolutely correct. But $50,000 is allocated to this program. 280 guns are turned in, and they're out of money already. wonder if you could come in from out of town. They must have a residency requirement. Department spokesman here in Newark says, Sergeant Glover said, the response far exceeded expectations. He said a similar program in 2005 yielded 400 guns over a four-month span. I don't think much could exceed expectations in Newark, New Jersey, if you you happen to check their crime rates. Four other churches are scheduled to host two-day gun buyback program. That'd be fun to go watch, wouldn't it? See who actually trundles down to the local church and turns in their firearms. I just think that is really something. Well, in Topeka, Kansas, it's not going well for criminals, at least some of them. Police in Topeka say that a man who was trying to rob a discount cigarette store got stuck in a vent, and he had to be rescued by the firefighters. Police said the man was stuck in a ventilation pipe for about 3 hours, early Thursday. He eventually managed to call his daughter, who called 911. Hey, sis, I'm stuck on this burglary. Could you call 911 and get me out? The firefighters found the man head down in a ventilation pipe and pulled him out. He was taken to a Topeka hospital and will be charged after he's released. You find some real creepy stuff as a cop, as a burglar. I can remember once back in the Ice Age when I was investigating a burglary. I sensed something was wrong when I was searching inside. This was a Army surplus store where the burglary was reported. It was in the middle of the night, and I sensed something was on. I looked up over the door where I was, and there was some small juvenile kid there, about 13. He was real skinny and short, and he was hiding over the door sill. And kind of gives you the creeps. But anyway, he was not shot or anything like that. But that's interesting. You saw the University of Massachusetts had invited this convicted terrorist to speak at UMass at Amherst. This convicted terrorist planned appearance tonight at the University of Mass. It drew sharp criticism. It's been canceled because the man, Ray Lucas Levasseur, he's obligated by his parole department in Maine to stay in Maine. He's not allowed to cross the state line. Seems like somebody should have figured that out ahead of time. But he did 18 years in prison for his role in a series of bombings in the 1970s and 1980s. And he was originally just scheduled to speak there last week, but the invitation was rescinded. He was subsequently re-invited by some faculty members and university leaders that said that they wanted to be sure that they upheld the freedom of speech right there. But apparently he can't. When you're inviting parolees, you better check and see if they're allowed to move out of the state. I guess that's the moral of this story. Here's another great story about criminals. See, we've done burglars tonight. Well, let's look at some robbers. There's a guy named Kyle Wendorski in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He's a 21-year-old college student. He's in the Army Reserve. He was walking home Tuesday morning this week on the east side of Milwaukee when four men with stocking caps over their faces forced him into an alley at gunpoint, and they demanded cash from him. In an account confirmed by the Milwaukee police, Wendorski said the men ordered him to the ground on his stomach, and he was helpless as they fished his wallet out of a pocket. They counted out $16 that he had, and by their raging tone, he could tell that they weren't happy. They were looking for more. In fact, they had been busy that night with other victims. The muggers then turned their attention to Mr. Wendorski's various identification cards, driver's license, etc., and there they found a military ID. Suddenly, Wendorski says, there was confusion, then there was silence. The ringleader of the group says, we've got to give this stuff back. This guy's military. And with that, Wendorski said, he got a heartfelt thank from the rather patriotic leader of the thieves and a fist bump for his service to the country before they took off. The still masked men helped him up to his feet, returned him his money, and then said, this guy's been cool. Wendorski remembered, we can't do this, and they took off. Well, earlier that night, apparently the same bunch, I think, had robbed if I'm not mistaken, they had robbed a priest. Right, they robbed the holy man. and they weren't quite as kind to him. Well, Dorsky, by the way, by chance, he is a criminal justice major, and he's not sure what to think. He said, I'm just happy I'm still alive, and that certainly is the case with armed robbers. You know, we were talking about our guy down in Fort Hood, Texas, Nidal Hassan, the Army psychiatrist. He was charged today in the murder of 13 people. This New York Times article I'm looking at is like a day off from that, but they're talking about how rare the death penalty is in military cases. And he can face the death penalty. He will be prosecuted in a military justice system where no one has been executed for nearly a half century. Do people realize that? The last one was way back in 1961. No one has been executed in the military system, although they've committed murders and murder rapes and all kinds of things. This Army psychiatrist, he killed 13 people. And one of the commentators here is Eugene Fidel, who teaches military law at Yale. He says, our military justice system is not bloodthirsty. It's an interesting way of putting it. But before a military execution can actually be carried out, isn't this interesting? The president must personally approve of it. George Bush signed an execution order last year for an Army cook who was convicted of multiple rapes and murders in the 1980s. Ooh. But a federal judge has stayed that order to allow for a new round of appeals in federal court. And you're going to find out here as I read and talk more about this that they have a lot more rights as a defendant in the military system than they do in the private justice system, in state criminal justice or in the federal courts. Federal civilian executions are rare. Three men, including the Oklahoma City bomber, Timothy McVeigh, have been killed by lethal injection in federal cases since 2001. Of course, you got the military system, the federal system, then your criminal justice system in each of the states. But even in the federal system, which there's less opportunity to commit the kinds of offenses you would be executed for because they're cared for in the states by state laws. But death penalties carried out by states are much more common, and everyone knows that. And we did know last Tuesday night, since I've seen you last, and we've talked, they executed John Allen Muhammad, the D.C. sniper, for his murder of one person. In Hassan's family down in Fort Hood, he's hired a private attorney, although the military gave him a major, Christopher Martin, to be his attorney, and I assume he was a good one. And he'll be the senior defense attorney. Experts in the military justice system said the decision to prosecute Hassan in military court revealed Monday officials appears clear-cut. The shootings took place on an Army base, so therefore the suspect is an Army officer, so it will be Army justice. Prosecutors in the military system, a defendant and his lawyer can be present at the military equivalent of a grand jury proceeding. Gets a little technical for most folks, but the defense is not at a grand jury proceeding or the defendant in the state justice systems. That's simply the prosecutor presenting the case, or an assistant prosecutor who happens to be a grand jury prosecutor in large court systems. So he's not going to, they're not there. But in the military system, they are, and they're allowed to ask questions, and that's very unusual. That would certainly encumber our state justice system if we had to do that. They also turn over many more documents to the defense for trial. It's almost like full discovery. There's something in the prosecutor's folder. It has to be in the defense folder. So that makes it kind of interesting. The jury would consist of at least 12 officers of higher rank or seniority than Hassan. So in other words, this has got to be people above the rank of major. There's 12 of them. It's a very educated jury, says a Duke University law professor. Consisting exclusively of college graduates. Well, that's almost true. There could be people who have commissions and advance through the system that under special circumstances don't have college degrees, but I'm not sure college degrees makes a better juror. Are you, Mike? I don't see why necessarily. But anyway, that's the rules of the military system. If they can't find impartial jurors, isn't this interesting? They're allowed to draw them from another facility. In other words, if they'll need some other officers, they'll go out other place to do it. 15 members of the military have been sentenced to death in the past 25 years, and none have been executed. The president's involvement sets military death penalty cases apart. The president can commute any federal death sentence, civilian or military, and must personally approve each military execution and sign an order in order to carry it out. The president of the United States personally approves a death penalty, and it is a political type of act. When President Bush signed Ronald Gray's execution order in 2008, it was the first time a president had done so in 51 years. The first time in 51 years. In 1957, President Dwight Eisenhower approved the execution of John Bennett, an Army private convicted of raping and attempting to kill an 11-year-old Austrian girl. How do you think he was? Audrey, would you have any idea what the form of execution was for Mr. John Bennett in that case? You do. You know. It's hanging. Yes, he was hung. The Army actually has a manual. The Army has a manual and everything. Well, they have one for hangmen also. So that's kind of an interesting thing going on there. This is kind of a long case to go over, so I think I'm going to skip this one about the Innocence Project students at Northwest Western University. What's happened with them is they go out and try to find out people that they think are wrongly convicted and serving on death row. Well, they found out, and I'm really shortening the story because it's a long one, they found out that some of these journalism students that do this, they get graded, apparently, based on the kind of evidence and the work they do, because it's part of a class project, this Innocence Project. Well, it finds out it looked like they may have been paying witnesses to say the right things. And then we find out that the former governor of Illinois, Governor George Ryan, who is doing what? Yes, he's serving time in a federal prison right across the state line in an honor camp in Wisconsin. He actually used some of this information from Innocence Projects to commute the death sentences of everybody that was on death row in Illinois because he didn't want these people to be executed. I find that really interesting because I think Governor Ryan did that so that when it came to the sentencing phase of his hearing, his conviction for corruption charges, that they would look at him as a good humanitarian person. That's my own belief about that. I think we'll roll up the news here at this point. We've got a Baltimore mayor on trial and all kinds of things going on in the news, of course, more than we can handle in any one show. But tonight we're going to do something that we haven't done for a while. We've been doing surveillance and privacy law and these serious types of things here in the past. But what we're going to do tonight, we're going to look at an old-time radio show about counter-espionage. And this is David Harding, and the case here is the Washington Spy Woman. And I think you enjoy some of this. I think the background sound and these actors are always very good at what they're doing. So tonight's case is David Harding. There was a series of these radio stories that you can find on archive.org. And yeah, I think you'll enjoy this. As soon as my switchboard comes back, I think it's looking. Hold on. Mike, where did it go? I think it's coming back slowly. I think you'll enjoy this story. It's got some mystery intrigue in it, and you'll love the antics of some of these players. As soon as my switchboard comes back, Mike, now is the time to put down your coffee cup and look for where this switchboard is. I think it may be back. Don't leave, folks. It's thinking. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. It's still not there. I think it will come up in just 1 second. If not, we'll do this the old-fashioned way. We'll actually play it off the internet, but I don't think we're going to have to do that. I certainly hope not. Could do another news story while it's thinking. Never had this happen before, but I'm sure we'll get through it. Unfortunately, this is going to slow us down on the time we'll have for the completion of the thing. Let's see what's going on here, if we found it yet. All right, we're getting closer. Ladies and gentlemen, David Harding, counter-spy. Here we go.
Washington calling counter-spy. Washington calling counter-spy. Washington calling counter-spy. Presents Philip H. Lord's Counter Spy. Backing our great Army and Navy at the front is our invisible army of United States counter spies who work quietly, effectively, and swiftly against the enemies in our midst. They are the dread of the German Gestapo, the Italian Obra, and the Japanese Black Dragons. Imagine the ace counter-spy of them all as David Harding, specially appointed with authority to work however or wherever he will. 3 weeks ago,
in Washington,
a very prominent bachelor by the name of William R. Terrace stood in the center of his expensive apartment. The time?
11:25 at night.
A dim light burned on a little ebony side table. Mr. Terrace stood there. His face was ashen white.
Great beads of perspiration stood out on his forehead.
Go on. You betrayed your country. Go on. Go on. Pull the trigger, you coward. Go on.
Case of suicide, Mr. Harding. You're the chief, and what you say goes, but it's just the case of a wealthy bachelor in poor health.
Well, I admit, Mark, William Terrace probably did commit suicide. But remember this. We're at war. The Gestapo are experts at making a murder appear to be a suicide.
Then you're really going to investigate it?
Well, I think I'll at least ask a few questions.
Yes, sir.
Now, the note Terrace left, Mark, said he was committing suicide because of ill health. I think I'll drop in on his doctor and see how bad his health really was. You would know, Doctor, if Mr. Terrace was in poor health.
I was shocked at his suicide, Mr. Harding. From everything I know, Mr. Terrace was in perfect health.
That's quite interesting. I think I'll go over to Mr. Terrace's bank and see if finances were worrying him.
No, Mr. Harding. Mr. Terrace's finances were in perfect condition. He was worth nearly $750,000. He had many government bonds and securities.
Thank you. Mark, when a man commits suicide, and it isn't his health, and it isn't finances.
Look for the woman.
Exactly. And that's what I want you to do, Mark.
Yes, sir.
Now pick six men. Cover Washington from head to foot. And find out what woman William Terrace paid special attention to. Yes?
Mr. Harding, but never escorted any particular woman. Was known to be very proper and old-fashioned in ideals.
All right, Mark, that ends that lead. Meet me later. I'm going to take a long chance and visit the accounting firm which checked Terrace's books.
Why, yes, Mr. Harding. We've been the accountants for Mr. Terrace's firm for 9 years.
I want you to go to Mr. Terrace's office and get his office pad of appointments for the past year. Now, check that appointment list for lapses of time. Then check those dates against his personal checks and see what checks were made out during those periods of absences. This should tell us where Mr. Terrace was during those absences.
Mr. Harding, we went over Mr. Terrace's office pad and found he was absent from his business during the past year on 4 different occasions, a week at each time.
Good. Now, during those absences, did he make out any checks?
His first absence corresponds with a check he made out at the Saratoga Hotel, Saratoga Springs. During Mr. Terrace's second absence, he made out a check at the clubhouse, Pine Hill, South Carolina. This third check was made out at a clubhouse, Atlanta, Georgia.
Fine. Thank you. Proceed.
This is G6, calling from Saratoga Springs. Man in question spent week here in company of woman. Dark complexion, about 31, expensively dressed, unusually attractive. Full report follows.
Fine. Proceed.
G8, reporting from Pine Hill, South Carolina. Man in question stayed here accompanied by unknown woman in early 30s. Most attractive, expensively gowned, dark. Report follows.
This is beginning to get very interesting, Mr. Harding.
Yet we may still be on a wild goose chase, Mark. We have no idea who that girl was. She may have been perfectly all right.
But how can we ever find her? She may be anywhere.
Well, here's a little something I dug up. April the 2nd, William Terrace made out a check to the Washington Jewelry Company for $8,000.
Say, that's a pretty sizable amount for a bachelor to be making out to send to a jewelry house.
That's what I thought, Mark. I'm going to check that jewelry house. I wonder just what William Terrace bought with that $8,000.
Solitaire diamond ring, 10 1/2 carats, platinum setting, a woman's ring. We have no record that he said whom he was buying it for. That is all.
Thank you. Well, Mark, now we know that Mr. Terrace bought a ring for some woman. But who is she? Where is she?
Oh, that's a tough question, Mr. Harding.
Well, let's put 2 and 2 together and try to make 5. Check all insurance companies, Mark.
Yes.
And see if within a few days after April the 2nd, any woman insured a ring for approximately $8,000.
Say, that's clever reasoning. You win, Harding. We're getting hot. Here's the insurance report. April 5th, the solitaire diamond ring, platinum setting, was insured for $8,000 by a Miss Avery Rollins of 1370 Lincoln Boulevard Northwest, Washington.
Rollins. Avery Rollins. That name's very familiar.
She's high society, Mr. Harding. Lives with her uncle and aunt.
Uh-huh.
I got a report on her. Age 32.
Uh-huh.
Height 5'5". Light hair. Uh-huh. Light complexion. Very social. Educated at the Sorbonne, Paris. Uh-huh. Above reproach.
But the woman seen with William Terrace at the resort was dark. Dark hair. The weights are approximately the same, both apparently wealthy, both smart dressers. Mark, there's something wrong, something very wrong. It's a problem that's got to be approached from some unusual angle. Well, you have a very luxurious apartment here, Colonel Reynolds.
Thank you, Mr. Harding. I'm pretty proud of it, especially this library den.
I'm here to make a very unusual request, Colonel. As you may know, I'm a United States counter-spy. Yes, I do. Now, Colonel, you knew William Terrace personally, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Was his suicide a bona fide suicide, Mr. Harding?
Well, to be perfectly frank, Colonel Reynolds, I don't know. That's why I've come to you. I need the aid of a citizen, Colonel, prominent, who has some government responsibility. Now, you're 48.
That's correct.
A bachelor.
A confirmed one.
You're a very handsome man.
Oh, come now. Come.
Yes, and very fascinating to women.
Now, wait a minute, Hardy.
Oh, this is very serious business. Now, you're chairman on the board for the new airplane formations and armor.
Yeah?
That makes you a very interesting person to certain other persons. Colonel, do you happen to know a Miss Avery Rollins?
A very gorgeous woman, but I've never happened to meet her. She's usually surrounded by any number of admirers.
Well, I'm going to arrange for you to meet her, Colonel Reynolds. And I'm going to ask you to make yourself just as interesting to her as possible. In fact, I'm going to ask you to try and make it even a constant attachment for a time.
What? Oh, no, Harding, that's a little too much. I don't wish to get mixed up with women.
Now, Colonel Reynolds, you could be the principal factor in possibly exposing one of the most cunning spy rings in this country today.
You don't think Avery Rollins was in any way connected with Terrace's suicide? You don't think she's acting as a spy?
That's what I want to find out, Colonel.
Good Lord, Harding.
I've arranged with Lady Keston to give a formal ball next Friday evening. I've given her a list of guests she's to include. Miss Rollins will be one. And I'd appreciate your being another and casually meeting her.
Naturally, Rollins. Mr. Harding, under these circumstances, no man could refuse.
I thought you'd feel that way, sir. Now, after you meet her, please don't try to contact me in any way. Leave it up to me to find out what you're doing.
Weeks later, March 23rd.
G6, the colonel boarded train at Washington. After hour was joined by a woman already on train. She is of dark complexion, expensively dressed, very attractive, black hair, height approximately 5 feet 5. Ticket reads Palm Springs. That is all.
That's strange. That's not the description of Avery Rollins.
From that dark girl who's been meeting the colonel.
Good. What did you find out?
You were right, sir. After the girl got off the train with the colonel, I went to her compartment. There were unmistakable signs of dark-colored powder, blonde hair, and black hair which showed at the end of the hair, as if it had come out of a wig. Now, she must get on the train, get a compartment, and change her appearance before she comes out and meets the colonel.
Then it is Avery Rollins. Because she's been absent from Washington at the same time as the colonel has. She's probably explained to the colonel that because of their prominent standing in Washington, she must disguise herself.
Then, the way I see it, this Avery Rollins must have been the mysterious dark woman with whom William Terrace went off on trips before he was murdered.
Without a doubt. And she's connected with his murder in some manner. And I've got to make sure the colonel isn't killed the same way. She's off now down at Virginia Beach with him.
Thank you.
What a sunset, Avery.
Beautiful. I love to lie on the beach after all the others have gone in.
Look at those breakers on the sea.
John, sometimes I see a look come over your face. A look of pain. Anything troubling you?
No, dear. Nothing really.
Perhaps you're worrying about your responsibilities. Those new war plans or something.
No. I don't think I am.
Oh, I wish we didn't have to go back to Washington tomorrow.
We must, though. I've got some important conferences. Here, put these in your bag, will you, Avery? I'm afraid I'll lose them in the sand.
Oh, but why bring keys down to the beach?
I don't dare leave them in the hotel room. The flat one is the key to the secret cabinet in my library. It has the government plans we're drawing up.
Oh, no, no, John. Don't give me the keys. It's too big a responsibility.
Well, all right. I'll hide them next time under the rug at the hotel.
Let's go in the water. Come on.
All right. I'll beat you to it.
Oh, you just tried.
Oh, I was looking for you, Harding.
Well, hello, Colonel Reynolds. Glad to see you. Sit down. Now, I thought it might be better for us to meet openly at the hotel here rather than me to go again to your apartment.
A good many things have happened since we last talked, Harding.
Yes. And you've proved yourself a veteran. A professional counter-spy couldn't have done better.
Anything the matter, Harding?
Well, I think the big moment's here. It's now or never.
What shall I do?
Now, I'd like to have you invite Miss Rollins up to your apartment Tuesday night for a formal dinner. Just you two.
I'll try. You don't think, do you, Harding, Miss Rollins really is a spy?
Yes, Colonel. I do.
But I kept the key to my secret file where she could get it. Called her attention to it. Harding, tell me the truth. You don't think Miss Rollins was the girl who was with Terrace on those trips before he committed suicide?
Yes. His blood is on her hands, Colonel. And probably the blood of a dozen other men. Now, Tuesday night, after you've had dinner, I wish you'd go with her into your library den for coffee. But under no conditions, Colonel, drink the coffee. Now, I'll casually drop in a little later.
You intend to break her Tuesday night?
If I can. And I hope I can.
What's the matter, Colonel?
White as a sheet.
I'm all right.
What? Can I get you something?
No.
What is it, Colonel? You can tell me.
Harding, I love her.
You don't mean that.
Yes. Yes, I do mean it. I love her.
Good heavens, man, you can't.
But I do. I think she's innocent. She didn't try to copy the key. She's never tried to ask me questions about secret government affairs.
But she's a murderess, Colonel. Take my word for it, the blood of Terrace is on her. She'd double-cross you in a second.
I didn't realize how lonely I'd been. She's so clever, smart, beautiful, everything about her. I can't stand it.
You're not thinking of doing what William Terrace did.
No. No, not that. I guess I can see it through.
I'm sorry, Colonel. Terribly sorry.
I guess there's no more to be said.
You'll go through with it tomorrow night, as planned.
Yes.
Now remember, do not drink any coffee that's poured. I wish I could say something, Colonel Reynolds. I feel for you from the bottom of my heart. But this is bigger than you, for me.
I know. But still, I think she's innocent. Some more champagne, Avery?
Please, John.
That's a stunning evening gown. It blends right with your skin.
Oh, flatter.
Some more champagne for you, sir.
Yes. And Martin.
Yes, sir.
Miss Avery and I will have our brandy and coffee in the library tonight.
Yes, sir.
And I'd like to have you remain this evening.
Very good, sir.
Oh, by the way, Avery, did you ever know William R. Terrace?
Terrace? Wasn't he the man who committed suicide about 4 months ago?
Yes.
I've seen him, but I've never met him.
Oh. Awful thing, wasn't it?
Mm. I've heard some people say it wasn't suicide.
Yes, but you can't tell from rumors. Like the silverware?
Oh, you caught me looking at it, John. Yes, okay. I do like it. Everything about this place, it's so tasteful.
I had thought I was perfectly contented. But now it all seems so insignificant. To have something really worthwhile, you've got to have someone to share it with.
I found the same thing true, John. Closeness and comradeship mean more than anything.
Shall I have Martin serve the coffee and brandy in the library?
Yes, do I finish?
Yeah, let me help you.
But I'd rather sit on the divan with you.
Avery, you look like the most sophisticated woman in the world. Like one of those gorgeous paintings. And then you say something so tender.
Oh, but a woman should be a mystery to a man. Oh, there.
Avery.
I know.
But you don't know how much.
Yes, I do, John. My heart's pitter-pattering the same way. It has been ever since that last trip.
Do you love me, Avery?
Yes, John. Very deeply.
Avery.
Pardon me, sir, but Mr. Harding and his friend have called.
Oh, yes. Yes, Martin, show them in.
Oh. Certainly.
Why did they have to come at just this moment?
Well, Harding's a very good friend, I guess. He's just dropping in.
No, we were just on our way to the club. We thought we'd stop in, Colonel.
Hello, Harding. Glad to see you. Have you met Miss Rollins?
I don't believe I've had that privilege. Good evening, Miss Rollins.
Good evening, Mr. Harding.
Well, Miss Rollins is a friend of mine, Mr. Mark.
Good evening, Mr. Mark.
It's a pleasure. And Colonel Reynolds, Mark.
Good evening, Mr. Mark. Won't you join us in a brandy and coffee?
No, thank you. We've just finished dinner.
Sit down, gentlemen, and make yourselves comfortable.
Thank you.
Well, while you men chat, I think I'll go and freshen up a bit. We just finished dinner, a delicious dinner, Mr. Harding, but fried chicken, and you know what that does to the hand.
Well, I've always maintained the only real place to really enjoy fried chicken was in the bath.
You men chat, and I'll be back in just a few moments, if you'll excuse me.
Harding, it's all right to talk in front of Mr. Mark.
Yes, Colonel. He's a counter-spy in active service.
Harding, it can't be true. She's too decent.
I'm going crazy. Now, Colonel Reynolds, I'm going to have to be brutal tonight. Ordinarily, I wouldn't operate this way. But I'm going to do everything I can to expose this right here in front of you. I believe I owe it to you.
Tell me, Harding, she's really one of your agents working with you. Tell me that you suspected me and really did this so she could check on me. Tell me that. Ease my mind.
The only way, Colonel, is to let this unfold. Would you ring for your butler, please?
Yes. Harding, is it the butler you're really after? Tell me it's he and not Avery, isn't it?
Colonel, I know how upset you are. I sympathize. But I can't change the facts. Now, don't say anything for a minute.
Did you ring for me, sir?
I believe the Colonel wanted you to pour some brandy for me.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
This is a gun in your stomach. Don't move.
Harding.
Quiet, please, Colonel. Cuff his hands behind him, Mark. Tight.
I've got him. Then he's the man you're after, not Avery.
I believe he...
Martin.
There. Without his wig, he looks more natural, like his picture. Your butler, Colonel Reynolds, is Herr Franz Bergmann, one of the cleverest Austrian spies.
I am not him. I do not know whom you are talking about.
Colonel, when your butler was hurt by a car 6 weeks ago, you might be interested to know it was a plot. The man at the wheel of the car which ran down your butler was this man standing here. He wanted to pose as a butler so he could get in your house here. We've been checking on him for weeks. Here. Drink the coffee you served the colonel. Drink it. Yeah. You don't like dope coffee, huh, Bergman?
Please, Harding, Avery is coming back.
Now watch her when she comes in. I think she'll be pretty surprised.
There's something the matter in here. Well, is that your butler? His hair is...
Yes, Miss Rollins. We removed his wig.
Why?
Well, for the reason that he happens not to be a butler. But Herr Franz Bergman, a very noted Austrian spy.
Spy? He's a spy.
Yes. Quite a catch.
Oh, I'm so glad you caught him.
Mark, take Bergman over to the other side of the room.
Come on, Hitler, or I'll lead you by the nose.
Oh, John, you must feel terribly about this taking place in your apartment. Here, take this brandy. You look like a ghost.
Thank you. Thank you, Avery. Thanks. Now, Colonel Reynolds, I have a record I'd like to play for you. Would you mind my using your machine?
Why, no. No, the switch is right on the side of the radio.
It's just a short recording.
I feel a little dizzy. I guess I'll sit here by you, Avery.
Good. What kind of a record is it, Mr. Harding? What's the purpose of it?
Well, I believe that it'll be self-explanatory. It was made last night. There. The lines were spoken rather softly at the time, but I'll turn on the full volume so we won't miss anything.
Here. Quick, get the camera ready. Can't find anything but personal papers.
Oh, they must be there. The colonel told me himself. He kept them in the wall safe in his library.
That's all right, but if we don't find them, you'll just have to keep on playing him.
Oh, that old fool. I want to spit in his face every time I get near him. I can't stand to touch him.
Curse you. Oh, the plans are not here. Yeah, he has tricked you.
But they must be there.
We have failed tonight. But he'll probably put them in here tomorrow night.
I hope tonight would be the last. Then I could break him and force him to commit suicide like Terry. If he won't, we'll poison his coffee.
Not so quick.
You dog, it's vermin. I'll spare you. I'll kill you.
Avery, do you know what you're saying?
You pig, you swine, let go of me.
Fortunately, Colonel Reynolds, the plans weren't there. But if they had been, you wouldn't be alive tonight. She'd have worked on you till she'd gotten you to commit suicide.
No, and I would have made him kill himself just like I made Karras kill himself.
Shut up, you fool. Don't talk.
Yeah, she'd have told you she'd gotten the plans, that you'd be disgraced. She'd have broken your heart. You'd have done what all the other men have done she's worked on.
Then I'd have laughed at the stupid dog.
Colonel, her real name is Marie Schmitz of Hungary, a paid spy. She goes to the biggest bidder. This woman is one of the cleverest, if not the cleverest, paid woman spy in this country. And that butler of yours, Franz Bergman, is her husband. Take them away, Mark. The other agents are out in the front hall.
Yes, sir.
Come on, come on, now, come on, come on.
I'm sorry, Colonel, but I had to strip it all down before you so you'd never have any doubt.
I didn't know. A person could be hurt quite this much.
You may have saved the lives, Colonel, of thousands of our boys.
I hope so.
Come over here by the window for a minute, would you, Colonel?
Why couldn't she have been what I hoped she was?
Look at those Marines swing along. You've done them and the boys like them a great service, Colonel Reynolds. No one will probably ever know about it. But you will. And I will. Let's open the window.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's our show for tonight. Look at the show billing on the website for Blog Talk Radio, Jumble Justice Radio Show. See what we'll be doing next week. We'll have that filled in here in a few days. And I hope you enjoyed the little show tonight. And we'll be meeting again. And Audrey, what is it that Mike is saying back there? He said that last. What is it? Guy good by guy? I don't know what it is. Okay. Folks, we'll be seeing you. We're going to use Vera Lynn to cast us off again one more time.
We'll meet again. Don't know when. Don't know when. But I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Just like you always do. blue skies drive the dark clouds.